Hey there and aloha. Welcome to the Bodhi Fully podcast. This is Jisani. If you have been following me along for any duration of time, you know that I've been introducing myself as Jisan. Some people know me as Sunny, which is my middle name. It really depends on when I met you and who you are and how I've come to know you. But in the past couple of months, I've kind of gotten tired of wasting energy trying to think about whether I want to introduce myself as Jisan or Sunny, and trying to remember how I introduced myself to you if I was meeting you for a subsequent time, and coming back from Peru, which is what today's episode is going to be about. I'm coming to the realization that I just want to refer to myself as one thing and not have to think about how I introduce myself or how you see me. So welcome. I am Jisani, and I am beyond excited. I am thrilled. I am grateful to be here in this space today to record this episode for you, particularly because recently I've gotten to the point where I sat down to make a decision about this podcast. If you've been listening to the podcast, or if you haven't, it's been about 7 months, a little bit longer, since I've recorded anything, and I really just had to get to a point where I needed to make some decisions about what I was going to continue putting my love into and what I needed to fold. And the podcast was one of those things that I had decided to fold. And there is the saying, when man makes plans, God laughs. And they totally did that, because it hadn't even been dry, or it was fresh off the print. I don't know what that saying is exactly, but the ink hadn't even dried from me making this decision. And someone reached out to me to let me know how the one episode, I forget which episode he had listened to, but there was an episode he listened to most recently and just really resonated with it and wanted to reach out to me to let me know how much it resonated. And it just struck me, and it really hit home for me in a way that I've been wanting to show up in this world. As you may or may not know, I am a psychologist. I'm a licensed psychologist, and I've been doing a lot of work one-on-one with individuals. And there's something in the recent probably 3 to 4 years that has really begun to resonate with me in the sense that I don't want to change this world one person at a time. And you know what? I don't even want to change this world one day at a time. I have been foolish enough to believe that I am this important person making important decisions and doing such important work, but I've come to realize that I am just a speck of dust, and there is nothing that I do that is so important that requires me to see myself in this light that is not who I am. And so I'm at this point where I not only want to not make a difference one person at a time, I don't want to make a difference one day at a time. I just want to show up and to really enjoy and experience what life has to offer, for me to learn, for me to savor, for me to grow from, for me to expand with. And so I am here with, I don't want to call it a list because then it sounds like I'm tapping into my yang, the masculine energy too much, but I have this core set of not just values, but of higher commitments, things that I anchor myself to remember what's important, to help me make decisions that don't require me to use my ego, but require me to tap into my heart. And when I tap into these higher commitments, one of them is to express myself. When I express myself, I do it with the intention to share love and to expand the sense of aliveness in us, that spark where the breath begins, the aloha. And so when this gentleman reached out to me and to share with me how my self-expression had reached him in a way that he hadn't been reached before, I had to really reevaluate how I was making decisions, why I had decided to fold the podcast. And I've been tapping into my practicality a little bit too much. to my liking or for my liking. And today I wanted to share with you in a space from a space of gratitude and love that this podcast will go on, and I will share what comes from my heart, what comes through this vessel in a way that I would love to just create and cultivate a sense of sacredness, a sense of love, a sense of awe. And today, I can't think of any better way to do that than to share with you my experience coming back from Peru. So it's only been a couple of weeks since I've been back from Peru, and I can't help but still be in this space of being mesmerized by how time is really what we think of as a linear construct, but it's that. It's just a construct. It is an illusion. And it feels like I've been back from Peru for months, but I've only been back for maybe a little over 2 weeks now. And I went to Peru a few weeks ago because, and I'm going to rewind a little bit to share the context a little bit. A few years ago, I don't remember, 2020 maybe, 2021, in a meditation, I was told that death would show up at my door when I was 35. The year 35 came and went, and there was, from what I could tell, absolutely no death. There was no physical, literal death. There didn't seem to be any metaphorical death. Yes, I was making changes. Yes, I was constantly changing, evolving, but it didn't seem like there was anything that felt big or dreaded or like that feeling of like the other shoe dropping. It didn't happen. Year 36 came and I realized exactly what had happened and what was happening and continuing to happen. So I'll keep you updated as this evolves. But at year 35, death came and knocked on my door. It wasn't until year 36 that I actually decided to open the door and let death in. And the way that I did that was by listening to something that I heard in a meditation most recently, a couple months ago. And in a meditation most recently, I was told that Jason must die. Of course, this idea of death had been at my doorstep before, so I didn't really, I took it with a grain of salt. I pushed it to the back of my mind, not knowing exactly when or how or what I was supposed to do. And wouldn't you know it, a few weeks after that meditation, I found myself obsessively researching ayahuasca. And for those of you that don't know what ayahuasca is a plant medicine. It's a sacred spirit that resides in the Amazon jungle. And I had heard of ayahuasca back in 2017 from a friend, a dear friend who's actually been a guest on this podcast before. But I remember hearing his takes, his stories, and what he was sharing with me. And I went, that is amazing. But I would never put myself in that position. From what I remembered, ayahuasca was a plant medicine that called to only specific people, especially people who didn't particularly hate or have a distaste for the feeling of nausea. And I would much rather be in physical pain than be nauseous, which is why I never thought ayahuasca was something that I would ever do. I just didn't think it was for me. But there I was, a few weeks after that recent meditation, researching obsessively what ayahuasca was, what it did, where it was, who did it, finding any and every video I could on YouTube of what ayahuasca was like. And after a day and a half of doing this type of research, I found myself booking a trip, quote unquote, impulsively to Peru. Now, the thing about ayahuasca for me was that it really put me in a place where it wasn't just me waiting to the date of flying out to Peru to partake in the ceremonies. But it really was, it was something that I took seriously. So about 2 to 4 weeks before the ayahuasca retreat, I participated, like they strongly recommend, in a specific set of guidelines. So no fried food, no cheese. I was already vegetarian, so the no meat part wasn't difficult. No caffeine. There was just a lot of things that I probably took too seriously. But that preparation was extremely difficult for me in that I began to experience things like fatigue. And the fatigue, I thought, was maybe because I wasn't taking enough calories. So I just found myself munching constantly on nuts, not just because I wasn't sure if I was tired from not eating enough, but because I have this habit, this Achilles heel, if you will, where I rely on food a lot. I rely on food to cut the boredom. I relied on food to fill in gaps in my heart and my soul that I wasn't finding anything else outside of me to be able to fill. And I realized that through the particular guidelines, they call it a dieta, but it's a misnomer, but I'm going to, just for the sake of conversation here, call it a dieta. I found myself constantly grazing, munching, and really seeing with wide eyes how dependent I was on food, not just for nourishment of the physical body, but nourishment of my mental state and my emotional state. And so I found myself preparing for ayahuasca for a few weeks, and I was met, as soon as I decided to prepare for ayahuasca, I realized in hindsight that Mother Ayahuasca, came to me even before I landed in Peru in those weeks and prepared my body for the experience. The most recent experience that I've had that made me realize I wanted to share my experience of ayahuasca was when I flew back, and I'm going to go back and forth in the traditional linear time, so if you get confused, just bear with me a little bit. When I got back from Peru, one of the first things, I went from the airport, I went straight to work, I had clients, I don't know what I was thinking booking my schedule this way, but one of the first things that I did for myself coming back from Peru was to actually walk the dogs. I picked up my dogs, and I'm on my walk with my two dogs, Lania, Kea, and Kailea, and there was something extremely, drastically different about this walk than any of the other walks I've ever done with these two dogs. And I realized from that walk, the first walk back from Peru, that before Madre Aya, I didn't know what peace meant. I thought that I knew what it felt like to be in peace. I thought I knew what it meant to have all of my shit together because I didn't feel or experience anxiety or stress the way that other people, quote unquote, did. And I thought I knew what it meant to have peace, but this sense of peace was out of this world. And I only realized this because of a huge contrast. The way that I used to walk my dogs, because I have to walk two dogs at the same time, or I choose to, whenever one of the dogs begins to really take their time in sniffing something, or it's their like seventh time peeing and marking their territory, I start to get aggravated. And not aggravated in the way that I feel frustration, but I would start to feel antsy. I think antsy is the better word. And when one of my or both of my dogs finally got to the point where they were marking their territory for the seventh time, I would literally yank their leashes. I mean, not so much that I'm hurting them, but I would tug the leashes and want to keep going. And I would... I found myself in the past, and it wasn't until in hindsight when I'm doing the contrast that I'm realizing this, that I was constantly needing to be on the go. What's next? What's next? What's next? That was my mindset. I didn't even know that that was my mindset until I experienced this contrast. On this first walk back from Peru, I felt this overwhelming sense of peace, of joy, that it could have been their 22nd time sniffing the same thing on that fire hydrant or that tree, or their fifth time trying to chase a squirrel after I've told them no, that I really didn't want to be anywhere else. I was just there in that moment, and I wasn't thinking about what was next. I wasn't thinking about what had happened before. I was just there. It was the first time viscerally that I felt time just melt away. There was no past, no such thing as a future, and I was just there. And I share this with you because I'm beginning to really realize what it means to understand, and I've said this before, but it's like I'm experiencing this on a deeper level, what it means to know the human experience through contrast, through duality. I didn't know that peace was missing in my life, or this level of peace was missing in my life, until I experienced the contrast. And the beginning of my ayahuasca retreat, the ayahuasca experience, was Madre Aya showing me contrast. So when I got to Peru, and I'm going to fast forward just a little bit to the beginning of the first ceremony. We all sat, it was about 18 to 20 of us in a circle in a maloca, and we're about to partake in the first ceremony. It's dark outside because these ceremonies at Nemeyakaya, where I was partaking in ayahuasca, I think most of them do their ceremonies at nighttime, but it starts at 8, so it's dark. We are about to start the ceremony. We have candles in the middle of the maloca, and we're all sitting there holding a space of reverence, of sacredness, and I'm sitting there on my mat experiencing this space of setting an intention. And my intention for the ayahuasca retreat was to experience the purest frequency of love. So I asked, in my ignorance, Madre Aya, I would love to connect to the purest frequency of love. That is my intention. Please and thank you. And so it is. And they came around with my cup of ayahuasca, and I took it. And I remember my first ceremony, I'm nervous, but I feel a sense of calm because I feel safe and protected, as I've always have in my life. And a few minutes after taking ayahuasca, Madre Aya, I start to hear these beautiful frequencies. And as I start to really hear these beautiful frequencies, and I mean, I start to really hear these frequencies to the point where I thought maybe other people were hearing this, and I wasn't sure if this was just my personal experience, that I had to look around, even though it was dark and you really can't see anyone else but just figures. And I just allowed myself to slowly sink in to enjoying it. Really just sounded like a symphony of these beautiful frequencies in both ears. And Madre Aya put me into a deep sleep. When I came to from this deep sleep, I thought maybe 5 hours had passed. It really felt like I had been there for a really long time. And I remember thinking to myself, why aren't the cuaranderos, the shamans, singing the Icaros already? And for those of you that don't know, a very critical component that I didn't know actually to ayahuasca is the cuaranderos holding the space, not just holding the space, but actually singing an Icaros. The Icaros, it's a word for a sacred song. And the shamans are vessels, if you will, that channel this divine energetic song spirit to come through. And it's the song, the Icaros, that bring, from what I understand and what I experienced, that activate Madre Aya in you. And I remember coming from this deep sleep, wondering why they hadn't started singing. And I thought, oh my God, there must be something wrong with this group that the shamans don't even want to sing to us. And as soon as I started thinking that, I had one of the facilitators come around to me and ask me if I wanted a second cup. And because I had felt the experience of Madre Aya coming into my body and beginning to activate things in me, and then I didn't feel it when I came out of that sleep, I said, yes, please give me that second dose. I took that second dose, and within minutes, it's like I went straight to hell. In my personal hell, I experienced things like shame, disgust, agony, despondency, this disconnect from God, from love, from source. It was the most agonizing experience of my life to date. And I remember being in this, if you want to call it a realm or a dimension, I was in this world where completely disconnected from source, from God, from love, didn't exist there. There was nothing but shame and disgust. The word disfigurement kept coming up. I felt a psychological break, a physiological break, and all I wanted was someone to just come kill me. I remember throughout the first experience, I like told myself it's only going to last a few hours. It's going to be over soon. So it wasn't like I thought I was lost forever in this world. But even though I knew it would sometime, hopefully soon be over, I wanted someone to come end my life. It was the most agonizing experience of my life, and I did not want to be there. Personal hell, I had never experienced anything like that before. And I spent 6 hours in the ceremony, and I'm sure it's not the whole 6 hours because the first part of it, which was actually really much shorter than I thought it was, of hearing those beautiful symphony of frequencies and falling asleep. The cuadanderos usually start singing within 30 to 45 minutes after the ayahuasca is taken. So I know that the first part of it wasn't that long, but that second part, however many hours I was in it, I did not want to be in it. I was in hell. I wanted someone to come take me out. So the first ceremony comes and goes, and it is now finally the morning time. And having spent all night, all morning in the Maloka, I picked up my stuff, my pillow, my flashlight, my water bottle, my journal, and I walked myself back to my tambo. And as I'm walking myself to my tambo, this overwhelming feeling of fear comes over me. And with this overwhelming fear of terror gripping my heart, I had never experienced terror like that before in my life, I begin to weep. And as I'm weeping and walking to my tambo, I'm making decisions in my head that I'm going to go back, I'm going to pack my bags, and I'm going to leave. And I'm going to take a flight back home. I don't want to partake in this ever again. And I'm thinking these thoughts. And Munai, the resident cat, beautiful white cat, comes and meets me on the path and starts walking with me and walks me back to my tambo, purring to me, singing to me, letting me know that it's okay. And it was such a profound experience. And I had this connection to this beautiful animal. And I don't usually connect to cats, so that was actually a first for me. And, you know, I spent the rest of that morning, I got a plant bath, we had breakfast together, we're in integration together, the integration circle, the morning after, and slowly I begin to feel this sense of conviction that I need to go through all four ceremonies. I slowly start to feel this resolute decision in my heart that I'm going to see this through. And so the second ceremony happened that day. So it's the first ceremony, and then immediately after we have the second ceremony the day after. And the second ceremony for me was very different. I took my first cup, and I'm sitting there going, why isn't anything happening? I don't feel anything happening. And I'm wondering these questions. And as soon as I ask myself, should I take a second cup? Madre Aya comes and knocks me out and puts me to a deep sleep again. As soon as I wake up from this deep sleep, I am terrified. And I can't even explain to you what this feeling of terror feels like because I don't know who I am. I don't know where I am. I don't know what it means to be an I. Like, there is no sense of I. The sense of I has completely dissolved. I'm terrified. It's dark. I hear things. I see things moving. I'm feeling my mat and my ground going, what is this feeling? Like, there was no sense of order. There was no cognition. There was no understanding of life, of experience. And like, to the point where I don't know what the ground is. I don't know what down means, what up means. Like, I don't know what's happening, and it's complete terror. I don't know how long that terror lasts, but then immediately I start to feel my body. Now that I feel like the physical sensations of nausea, of the purge that needs to happen, I am now back in my body. The terror subsides only slightly, and all of a sudden I'm needing to purge, but I can't purge in the way that you'd think of purging. So if you know anything about ayahuasca, you know that a lot of purging happens through vomiting. But you can purge. The body purges also through, you know, having the runs. So a lot of people need to run to the bathroom. Purge also happens through shaking of the body. You're crying, you're purging. When you're crying, you're purging. You can also purge. I didn't know this actually until I went to Peru, but apparently you can also purge through yawning. So there are lots of different ways to purge. You can also purge through the way you're breathing as well. But I literally physiologically am like slammed back into my body because I need to purge. But when I go to my purge bucket to purge, nothing comes out. Like, you reach that climax when you finally feel like you're going to like throw something up. But then I found myself yawning. Right after that first experience of needing to purge, all of a sudden, I'm thrown into this experience where I feel like I'm in agony, and this wave upon wave of needing to like birth something comes through, and I'm in labor. I don't have physical children, so I don't know what it feels like, what it means to be in labor, but I am in labor. All ceremony, this is all I do. I'm in this state where I'm birthing something. And then Madre Aya takes me back to the beginning of when life started and how life started. And I have this experience of the thing, the being that is birthing, but I'm also the thing that is being birthed. It is both terrifying and mesmerizing. And I realize that as I'm like pulled into this experience, I'm taken, if you want to call it, back, right, in terms of linear time, I'm taken back to when life started. This is how life started. This is what Madre Aya was showing me. And Madre Aya was giving me this experience, bringing me back with spirit to when life started and life birthed itself. And it was the most amazing experience I've ever had. And I would probably say, if I have to compare the two ceremonies, the second ceremony was more difficult than the first, in that it required a more active participation of me. It was probably slightly more terrifying than the first, but it was also more mesmerizing. And I don't know if it's because I got stronger from the first ceremony, in addition to the feeling that love was carrying me through, spirit, source, was holding me and holding my hand and carrying me through this experience, that I felt this absolute resolution inside of me that said I was going to go through these experiences with an open heart and gratitude. It was so humbling to have this experience. So that was the second ceremony. It was amazing. The third ceremony was a lot gentler. I don't know if it's because I had energy work with one of the facilitators that day, a couple hours before the third ceremony, but it was a lot more gentler. I did feel the need to want to purge, but all of my purges, with the exception of that one time of like actually being able to physically vomit, all of my purges looked more like yawns. Like, I would look or and feel like I want to like throw something major up, like something really dark, something really deeply suited, and then I finally bring it up to the back of my mouth, and what came out instead was this like yawn, but this yawn was out of this world. It was different. So the third ceremony, bringing myself back, was a lot lighter. It was a lot gentler. What I experienced, in addition to the physical sensations of needing to purge, I felt all of my cells in my body light up. And it was almost as if like I was a Christmas tree, and I can literally feel every cell light up like a Christmas tree. And it was really, really beautiful and interesting. So that was the third ceremony. Really not much more that I can share cognitively what was happening. But I just know that it was an experience that my body needed to go through. And then maybe it was an integration of some sort. I'm not sure exactly yet. And then the fourth ceremony was definitely something that I am super humbled by and very grateful for. So at the beginning of the fourth ceremony, I took my cup, or no, this is before I took the cup. So we're beginning the ceremony, and I have yet to take my cup, and I hear a voice that says, "You don't need a second cup tonight." I heard that voice, and I nodded, but then I felt this smile come. Like, I started smiling, but it wasn't me. It was such an odd and what's the word for it? Like, magical experience. I felt this smile come on my face, and it wasn't me after I heard that voice. And I took my cup, and I'm waiting for ayahuasca to Madre Aya to begin activating in my body, and nothing is happening. So I'm laying there grappling with this understanding that Madre Aya doesn't feel like is activating in me. And maybe an hour went by, because I hear the cuaranderos begin to sing their Icaros. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, I have to take the second cup. Because if I don't take a second cup and I don't feel Madre Aya activate within me, this is how my retreat ends. This is the fourth ceremony is my last ceremony, this retreat. And this is going to be my last memory of ayahuasca, Madre Aya. And I did not want to end my ceremony this way. So I sat up, and I almost, and what they ask you to do is knock on the ground if you need their help or if you need more ayahuasca. And I almost knocked on the ground to ask for more. But something inside me said, you know what? Trust what you heard. And as soon as I felt that feeling and that decision that I'm going to trust that voice inside of me, Madre Aya came and knocked me out again. When I came to with this like extreme, intense feeling of needing to purge. So I got to the edge of my mat, and I am literally rocking myself back and forth because this feeling is so uncomfortable and it's agony. Again, I would rather be in physical pain than be nauseous. And I'm rocking myself back and forth, waiting for the shaman, one of the shamans, to come and sing to me and to release me from this nauseating, this agonizing feeling of being sick and feeling like my body is failing me and being broken. And Maestro Augusto, the male shaman, came and started singing his Icaros, or my Icaros, I don't know, the Icaros to me. And when he did, something broke open. I've experienced my heart breaking open before in my life, but this was different. Something broke open, and I began to weep, not just from my heart, but from the bottom of my soul. And I felt this deep, intense, I don't even know if it's primal, but like a deep sense of sadness begin to well up inside of me. And I began to weep. And not just weep, like when I've felt intense sadness, and I felt intense sadness before to the point where I would put myself in a cold bathtub, I'd curl up in a ball and cry for hours. But this sadness was deep. And instead of crying from my heart because I'm sad, my whole spirit was crying and weeping. And after, I don't even know how long I was weeping in this way from sadness, another feeling came, and this voice with this feeling said, "Does God live within you?" And I just, the sadness left, and all of a sudden the weeping got even deeper. But now I am on my hands and knees, my face is, I'm prostrate on the ground, my face is planted, kissing the ground, because of this sense of holiness, this purity of God that came and visited me. I felt so undeserving of this feeling. It was the most amazing experience. And now this weeping is no longer because of a sadness or even the fact that I felt ashamed or undeserving of this feeling, but just a sense of awe. I have never cried this way. Yes, I cry when I feel awe, like I tear. But this sense of awe was so overwhelming and just completely transformed every cell in my body. And to be in the presence of God in that way was the most humbling experience of my life. And I will always remember that question, does God live within you? I have, quote unquote, preached for as long as I can remember during my self-development journey that the God spark is always inside, right? We carry this God spark, but this feeling of experiencing the presence of God and Source, and through questioning me, being told that God lives within, there are just no words for what that was like. Throughout the ceremonies, there were lots of things happening. Like, I received certain messages, for example, that there are higher beings right now looking for the best way to save humanity because we're at the brink of extinction, and looking for the best way to sustain humanity, looking at all possible paths, especially when those of us partake in these types of experiences, whether it's through plant medicine or meditation or another type, any other type of devotional ritual action, that we intentionally create a space to connect to the divine. There are higher beings that are looking for the best path. They're looking at all possible pathways to saving humanity. Like, that was one of the greatest messages that I think I received during ceremony 3. But the experience of ayahuasca for me in hindsight really isn't about experiencing magic and God and then coming back a changed person. I realized the experience of Madre Aya, what she wants to teach us, is not the eye-opening hallucinogenic properties of Madre Aya, but it's what you bring back and how you begin to implement those things that you're learning. And I realized that there is a secret to going through the ceremonies in a way that really amplifies the experience, and it did for me. And the secret for me to go through these experiences, or the experiences of each ceremony, was to release, to surrender, and to trust. And those three things, release, surrender, and trust, are things that I realize are actual quote-unquote secrets, the keys to living this life in a way that you are completely embodying your, if you want to call it, your life purpose, embodying your presence, your spirit. Release, surrender, and trust. There really is no other way. Coming back home, I remember I was one of the first ones off the plane. I'm running because I really need to use the bathroom, but I know I need to go through customs, and I want to go through customs first so I don't have to stand in line. But wouldn't you know it, there was another flight that came in before us, so I have to stand in line anyway. So I'm hopping from, you know, both feet, like left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot, because I really need to pee, but I don't want to leave the line. it's finally my turn. I get to the customs officer and he starts a full-blown conversation with me. And I'm doing my best to have this conversation with him, to be kind, to be loving. I'm laughing and I'm trying really hard to hold my pee. And he finally gets to the point where he wants to finish this conversation with me. He looks at me in the eyes and then he goes, "Welcome home." And then I realized, for as long as I've been alive in this lifetime, I have never felt at home. And it's this lesson that I was beginning to pick up earlier this year that I've been carrying home inside of me. But it's almost as if the universe, through that customs officer, was sharing with me, "Welcome home. That home is inside of me. Your home is inside of you." And when you begin to really come into yourself, the self that is connected to God and Source, you come home to yourself. And it was the most validating feeling. I couldn't have, quote unquote, closed the Peru chapter in any better way. So I come home from Peru. I come home from experiencing Madre Aya personally with the two goals of expressing humility and devotion every day of my life that I'm awake. I have begun to integrate cacao into my ritual to help me release what feels impure in my heart and body. And I'm still human. So I experience the extreme end of peace that I am now able to experience, but I also experience a turbulent anger and frustration that I've never felt before. And I know it's Madre Aya bringing it up, Spirit bringing it up, asking me, do I want to now release this frustration and anger and choose to forgive and accept, or do you want to keep it? And so I feel these feelings, whether you want to call them bad or just constricting, but these feelings come up, experiences come up in an intense way, in a way where Spirit wants to ask me, you have to uproot it, you have to feel it, and then you have to choose, do you want to release it or do you want to keep it? And I'm realizing now that the whole point of me going to ayahuasca wasn't to experience Madre Aya personally. It was a trigger. It was walking through a portal or doorway that asks, do I want to keep the old Jisan? Or can you finally allow her role to be decommissioned? Do I finally give myself permission to decommission the role of Jisan? There are lots of things that have happened in Peru that are really helping me to understand. I mean, there's so much, if you want to call it 3D stuff that happened during the retreat, in between the ceremonies, that triggered the shit out of me, that triggered everyone else, that taught me to be compassionate, to be loving. I'm really realizing, though, that I've been missing something that feels really good to integrate back into my life. And it's this idea of tapping into what's sacred and then allowing your life to be an act of devotion to that thing that's sacred. I think that's something that's been really missing in my life. So I'm going to cap it at that. I hope there was something in this sharing that helped serve you for your highest purpose. I wanted to leave you with this one thing that I heard while I was in Peru that helped me to feel more empowered, more in my agency, and I hope it does the same for you. And it's this. I am not subject to life. Life is subject to me. I love you all. Thank you so much for creating in this human experience with me. I am signing off here, and I will talk to you guys soon.